It's great to be back in warm Southern California, because it's a lot colder than this in Nevada. We're starting a new series. I was shown, actually, this series by Kyle Eidelman of Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky. He's a teaching pastor there, and it's phenomenal. So I thought, yeah, they've got a format for Sunday mornings. We're going to do it, because it really does hit us where the rubber meets the road. So for the next several weeks, actually next week we're taking a break because Bert's going to be teaching us next week, but then 3 weeks later, or 3 weeks more after Bert, we're going to be going through this, not a fan, but follower of Jesus. It's very good, very interesting, you'll see. How many of you, when you were growing up, or perhaps even still, had lemonade stand? Notice most of it's the women. Yeah. I think I can kind of see that because it's, you know, it's not just something we might try it, us guys. We'll throw it up, spur of the moment type thing, right? But then realize, boy, this is way too much work. And you got to stay here too long and just wait for people, you know? So women, yeah, I can understand. But the infamous lemonade stand. But you know that there are, well, I didn't try lemonade, actually. I was in Illinois, and I tried hot chocolate. And found out real quick that your hot chocolate only stays hot for about a half hour, and then you lose a lot of your clientele. But the famous lemonade stand. There actually are professional lemonade stands. Did you know that? You probably assumed that. That took me by surprise. You who had lemonade stands, maybe you understand that. But there are some professional lemonade stands out there. And so think about it. You know, the logic then just kind of dictates that some child somewhere ended up going into the lemonade stand business for full time. I mean, that became their career. He or she wanted to try it one summer afternoon after seeing some other kids probably doing it in the neighborhood and going, aha, or maybe seeing it at, you know, one of the summer baseball games set up there in the baseball park, and they thought, I can make a little on top of my allowance and, of course, save it for college, right? Not spend it on the hot dogs. And so they try it out. Get dad to help set up a rickety little stand, paint a sign on it, lemonade for, I mean, come on, 50 cents, right? Not this nickel, for Pete's sakes. And after one successful day, they'll try it again and again and again. And then they get invited to bring their stand to a middle school baseball game, where, of course, they up the glass price to $2 instead of just the 50 cents. Pretty soon, they've got lots of invitations to bring that lemonade stand to all kinds of events. They're getting really busy, taking lemonade stands all over town. And sure, they're making a nice profit, but it's turning into more, isn't it? It's turning into a little bit more of a commitment. Things are a lot busier. Things are a lot more professional. It's taking up more time than expected. You've got to make special orders and find these people that are selling lemons cheap, you know, and abundantly. You're tracking all of your expenses on a spreadsheet. What started as a little hobby has now become a time-consuming commitment. And all commitments, you realize, are what? Time-consuming. Yes. That's why they're commitments, because they consume a lot of time. And in that moment, you realize the choice has to be made. Is this going to become my career? Is this going to become a career for me or not? And if it is, you continue, right? You've made the decision. Your mind adjusts to it. It's not something that's bad. It's something that's going to be good because you're going to be doing it for a while. Or you stop. Why do it anymore? If I'm not going to make it a commitment at that particular level, then forget it. Are you going to hire a few employees to kind of share the load? And some of us are thinking, Maybe we should go into the lemonade stand business. Others of us are just thinking, boy, I wish my kid would be that, you know. He doesn't even know how to read a spreadsheet. Doesn't even know what a spreadsheet is, for Pete's sakes, yet alone budget his allowance. But whatever we're thinking, it's understanding that at that moment, the moment when we all have to make a decision, and we've all had those kinds of moments, haven't we? We've all had those kinds of moments. Is this going to be a hobby, or is it going to become a career? Guys and girls, but guys in sports, you know, you have to all of a sudden decide when you're done with high school. Are you going to continue this in college, hoping that you can actually do this? Be one of the elite few to do it as a profession? And your major in college is based on it, isn't it? For guys and gals. So yeah, it's quite the decision. Is it going to be fun, or is it going to be something more than fun? Am I trying this out, or am I now investing myself completely into it? These kinds of moments are unique to just the business world. It's not unique just to our future as far as what we're going to do as occupation or things or situations like that. I think these kinds of decisions are much more common. These experiences are much more common when it's in the realm of relationships, investing time into other people and them investing time into you. Think back, those of you who have to, think back to that first relationship, serious relationship that you had, and that time when you had to kind of determine or distinguish or define the relationship, the DTR moment. Guys, you shudder because you avoided it like the plague. Girls did not. Girls, they wanted it right off the bat. They wanted to define the relationship. What's this all about? Right? I remember ours, 5 years of dating, and finally it came to that one night. Yeah, well, I guess we should either decide we're going to get married or why stick together, right? That was a poor way of bringing it up. Luckily, I made the right choice. And 39 years have proven that that is indeed the right choice. But it was not comfortable. And because it wasn't comfortable for me, it wasn't comfortable for Mary Lou. It was a lot easier for her to bring the questions up, and I avoided it like the plague every time. For 5 years, I avoided it. She could tell her story, but I've got the floor right now. But I think you remember it. I think you remember that time. If not, let this video just kind of jar your memory a little bit and also introduce Kyle to you.
DTR. Some of you will recognize what those letters stand for. If you're not sure, let me help you out. If you are a young man in a relationship with a young woman, then chances are these letters are enough to strike fear into your heart. You may run away from, postpone, you may dread the DTR talk. Some young men will even terminate a relationship if they feel like the DTR talk is imminent. It is that official talk that takes place in every romantic relationship. Do you know what it stands for, DTR? Define the relationship. You sit down and you decide where things are going. Have things moved from casual to committed? I remember this date I went on in high school. On the very first date, the girl tried to have the DTR talk with me. First date, DTR. I got out of there PDQ. I just ran away.
Yep, I think that is the male answer to DTR is PDQ. Leave PDQ. Oh. Over the next several weeks, I want us all to examine a specific relationship that we're talking about, and that is the relationship that we have with our God, the relationship we have with our Savior, Jesus Christ. Now, I get the fact that many of us are in various, you know, places along that relationship line. Some of us have had this relationship for quite some time, and it's gotten pretty heavy and pretty involved. And others, it's something new. We're not exactly sure of what to make of any of this. Well, for those of you who are new, just sit and listen, and see what happens with your attitude and the actions that come from it. Maybe we're not ready for that talk yet, but I think most of us in this room need to have and need to continue to have DTR relationships with Jesus. He wants those kind of talks how often? Daily, right? And I think that that's not bad, actually, but some of us go, what? Are you kidding me? I do that at Christmas or Easter, for Pete's sakes. No. We need to define the relationship. We need to find out where we stand with Jesus. And why is it important? Let me ask, who is it important to? Is it important to Jesus as far as this relationship? No, not really. It's important mostly to whom? Yeah, to us. To us. And we can see that it's more important to us than it is for Jesus because it's him. It's him that's inviting us into the relationship, right? We are invited. And so, yes, it becomes important then how we determine the relationship and how we continue to understand that relationship and how we continue to define it. Let's look at Christ's invitation. And I'm going to use a verse that clearly lays out what it means to be a follower of Christ. Luke chapter 9, verse 23. Many of you know it. Maybe not by heart, but many of you know it. If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, how often? Daily, and follow me. Follow me. Now, follow me is this interaction, isn't it? I mean, it's almost conjures up this physicalness of following, physically following Jesus. And I think many of us welcome that kind of a relationship, at least in word, in thought, in mind. We welcome this DTR talk with God because we're ready. Many of us are ready to move to a different level, a deeper level of commitment. If you made that move once, it's easier to make it the second time. If you made it again and again, it's easier to see how this happens on a daily basis, where you connect with God expecting that this day I'm going to get to go even deeper. And it begins to all of a sudden become the defining moment of your life every day. And I think that that's proper. I think it's significant. I think it's the way we were designed. Many of us are ready to move past the casual into the committed and past the convenient into something more devoted. Ready to become more committed in this relationship. So we're ready for this talk. Again, some of us might not be because we kind of like the setup we have with Jesus, you know? We kind of like where it is right now. We don't so much define it, we kind of determine it. It's interesting. I mean, he's a nice guy. We like church. Gives us something to do on Sunday mornings, especially with our wives or our husbands, and to meet with some good friends, and it's awfully nice that we can get some breakfast while we're there. We kind of like what we've got going, and this idea of becoming more committed, though, of putting more into it, of putting more time into it. Wait, I kind of like the time I put into it. The idea of taking it to a different level, well, it makes us nervous. And I can say that many of us guys, we go into kind of a fight or flight response when we're asked to become more committed, especially to something as vague as church. But what we need to do is, again, define the relationship. You and God personally define the relationship. If you're open enough to start talking with God about that relationship, commitment is about to become serious with you. Where do we stand? Each one of us. Where do we stand in our relationship with Jesus Christ? Or here's how we need to ask a question for this particular series. Are we fans of Jesus Christ? Or are we followers of Jesus Christ? Now, some of us are wondering why I asked a question that way, or why Kyle kind of pops that question and actually commits his whole study to it. Because you say, well, we're followers of Jesus, right? We are. I mean, even our motto, look at, we're following Jesus together, right? Okay. I assume, but you know what they say about assuming. It's why we're here. We're followers of Jesus. But let's not jump to that answer too quickly. Let's discuss it. Let's talk about it. Let's hear me out. The word fan is short for what? Fanatic, right? Fan is short for fanatic. I mean, they even have one of those silly guys jumping around in an outfit that's named the Fanatic. And it's defined, fan is defined as an enthusiastic admirer. An enthusiastic admirer. Boy, that's a simplistic definition. And we're all fans of different things, right? I mean, guys, hey, talking about fans, this is the Sunday, isn't it? If you're a football fan, this is the Sunday that we are all fanatics, not just guys, girls as well. Many of us are sports fans. We watch the game. We cheer on the team. We own the jerseys of the team and or the specific players, right? That's being a fanatic. That's being a fan. We understand that concept when it comes to sports. And my concern is that Avalon Community Church has the potential of very easily, any church does actually, becoming a stadium full of fans for Jesus. Spiritual spectators, have you? But Jesus never cared about having fans. And as you read the Gospels, that becomes very clear. He never cared about having fans. There are a lot of fanatics that followed him, that came with him. If we define a fan as enthusiastic admirer, then fans were not very important to Jesus then, and they're not very important to Jesus now as well. Think about it, beloved. We have this tendency to come together once a week and be fans of Jesus. We sit in our seats, we open up our programs, we applaud at certain times, and then we leave thinking that as the fans, all of this service was done for whom? For us. Not for God, but we think it's done for us. We evaluate the sermon, we give the service, we give the song selection, the thumbs up or the thumbs down, and then we leave to come back to it and do it all again next week. And grade it all again next week if we have the opportunity, if we can make it. We feel pretty good about ourselves, that we're these great admirers of Christ because we've come. We've come, we've spent the time, but he never cared about having fans. Spiritual spectators. Just ask the next Pharisee that you come across. Look at the Pharisees in the New Testament. He didn't care much for them hanging around. Were they committed to him? They wanted to commit him, didn't they? So if we'll be honest with ourselves, we'll really search out our hearts and we'll begin to define that relationship with Jesus. We'll begin to truly define it. We'll be honest with ourselves. We won't deny anything about that relationship. And there's three questions for us to ask to define that relationship more. Three questions we're going to talk about today. The first one is, why are we here? Why are we here? Sounds basic, right? But actually, it's pretty deep, isn't it? When it comes right down to it, when we read through the Gospels, we see Jesus at different points of his ministry literally drawing lines in the sand. We also see him, he did it actually twice, literally. We also see him, however, drawing lines of action, lines of commitment with his teaching. He would separate fans from followers through what he was teaching. And there were distinct lines that separated him in his teachings. For instance, I want us to go to John chapter 6. John chapter 6. Jesus is in the height of his ministry. We read that large crowds are following him. He'd become very popular. He was working miracles. He was providing food from just 5 loaves of bread and a few fish for how many? Thousands. A lot of people were in the crowd following Jesus. But we read in chapter 6, verse 2, that Jesus realizes that they were coming for one reason. Because of the miracles. They were coming because of the miracles. The main reason the crowds were showing up was because of the spectacle. It's because of the show. They loved the show. And if it happened to happen to one of them, the miracles, well, that was even better, right? Or a friend of theirs. They didn't care as much about the teaching, about the life-changing lesson. They were there for what? For the show. So, why are we here? What's our because? He says it was because of the miracles. Are we here because of miracles? We're hoping to see some sometime soon. Is it because we like the free food? That's kind of a miracle in its own right. Is it because we think the seats are comfortable? No. We really like the music? Yes. I'd say that was a big draw, a big pull. Is it because we like the image of being here? Or do we like the fact that our kids are watched for a while? Why are we here? Why are we here? That's great for a while, but at some point we need to define the relationship. Why are we? In that passage in John 6, Jesus challenges the fans to a deeper, more intimate relationship with him. And if we continue in John 6, interestingly, down to verse 66, don't look at all the numbers in one line. Here's what we read. From this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. John 6, 66. Another line drawn. This is a big line. It's a deep line. It's not a dotted line at all. It is thick and dark because many of the disciples turned back at this point and no longer followed him. Clear-cut fans.
What was it? Do you remember? What was he
teaching about? That they no longer followed him. What was he teaching about that drew that specific line? Let me.
We just participated. He was teaching about communion, essentially.
He was teaching, unless you eat my flesh, unless you drink my blood, you are not my disciple. And this was hard, very hard for them to hear. You really had to have eyes to see and ears to hear that message. And from that time on, fans fell away. And only followers who understood what he was talking about crossed the line, continued, committed as followers. A lot of them went home because Jesus said, let's define what we've got here. Let's define this. And they realized that what he was offering is not what they were thinking that it was. It was not what they wanted. Not perhaps what they needed, yes, but it wasn't what they wanted. Because he's never going to offer something we don't need. We can be guaranteed that he will offer what we do need. And he'll know it better than we do. And it may be time for some of us just to maybe pack up and go home. Yeah, you could do something better with your Sunday mornings, especially if you play golf. They satanic game. Careful. Because we've come for a while, and now we understand things, and we know that we've kind of defined that relationship our way, and we aren't going to cross certain lines. Well, then why continue to come is the question. Why continue to show up if you have that understanding? Put it this way, you're not coming for anything for God, are you? You're really not coming maybe for anything with you other than maybe a slap on the back, it's for your ego. You're coming for more of the show, for seeing what miracle Jesus can do for you. But if you really are committed, you're going to hear his teaching, and you're not just going to let it drop to your feet, are you? You're going to cross the line and apply that teaching to your life. And in so doing, you're going to be amazed. The miracle will happen. The miracle does happen. Change is made. It's not anything you've done except stepped over the line, except committed. Beloved, Jesus wants there to be a point where we define that relationship personally from our side. Why are we here? Because why? For Jesus, his because, his reason is that he wants to have a deeper relationship with us. Is that why we're here? I pray it is, that we want to have an ever-increasing, deeper relationship with not only the God that designed us, but the Savior who died for us. So why are we here? Secondly, we want to ask ourselves, are we all in? Because if you're not willing to be all in, then again, don't bother coming. Don't bother showing up. Being a follower of Jesus requires a complete commitment. A follower of Jesus will do whatever it takes to follow Jesus. They're absolutely loyal. They are completely committed. On the whole, we don't do very well, do we, with absolute commitments in many different areas of our lives. I think we prefer selective commitments. And I'll speak for the men. We prefer selective commitments. Simply put, we kind of customize our Christianity. Too often we look at our relationship with Jesus and we define it by saying, you know, I'm going to follow Jesus, but I'm going to kind of pick and choose the areas in which I want to follow him. We may say, well, I'll follow Jesus, but don't ask me to forgive that person. That one per Jesus, you know who he is. Don't ask me to forgive that person because you know how badly he hurt me. And I deserve, I'm not going to let go of that resentment, that bitterness. Or I'll follow Jesus, but don't talk to me about my money. I work hard for that money. We're finally at a place where my family is secure and we can retire and that's going well. So following Jesus won't stop me from getting what I want. And it's that customized Christianity that says, well, we'll follow Jesus, but only in the areas where we're comfortable, only in the areas that we agree upon. We're Christians, but we're not all in. You find something wrong with that statement? We're Christians, but we're not all in. Who's defining that term Christian? Huh? We are. Who is it that should be defining that term Christian? Christ, and he does so in his word, a completely committed follower of Jesus Christ. That's what a disciple is. So yeah, that's an impossibility. It's an oxymoron. We're Christians, but we're not all in. If we're not all in, we're not Christians. We're not followers, we're fans. We're just fans. There's no option of selective commitment. It's not a possibility from Christ's defining the relationship. There's no bargaining, there's no bartering, there's no finagling. When we decide to become a follower, not a fan, but a follower of Christ, we have to go all in. You've got to go all in. That's the only option. And fans, they don't like the idea of going all in. They're not wild about making sacrifices. You know, they'll say, okay, well, I'll go to home games, but I'm going to watch away games on TV, right? They're not all in. It's pretty easy to figure out whether you're all in or not in defining your relationship. It's very easy for you to figure it out. Stop the denial and ask yourself if you're all in. But for truly, 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 truthfully answering why we're here, it's pretty easy to figure out whether we're all in or not. And if we answer we're here to have a deeper relationship with Christ, then I'll bet you that you are all in, at least to the degree that you know what all in means. And that's going to be redefined, isn't it, every day. More and more of that commitment is going to become realized. If we aren't here for the right reasons, chances are we won't be willing to go all in. So thirdly, why are you here? Are you all in? Thirdly, have we made it really our own relationship? Have we made the relationship really our own? Because let's face it, many of us started going to church because of perhaps a parent, right? Mom forced us, Dad said we had to. There wasn't an option. We went with the family. I remember all seven of us piling into our Metropolitan Nash Rambler. And a couple of times it didn't make it up the hill there in Palos Verdes to the church. We had to back all the way back down, take another. Well, my brother and I had to get out. And then it would make it up. Anyway. Maybe we started coming because of boyfriend or girlfriend or a spouse, you know. We came, beloved, to appease them. So in appeasing somebody else, it can be very easy to become a fan, not to have your own commitment. You're there just as a fan. It's like riding the car with someone who listens to a type of music that you're impartial to, right? That's not really yours. Let's say country music, right? And after riding to work and back, to school and back with this person time and time again, all of a sudden you build this little affinity, you know? Hey, I kind of like country music. You kind of start humming along to, hey, good looking. What? Yeah. I like Hank. If you're going to like country, you got to like Hank. So we might say we've become a fan, right, of country music. Are you all committed? Are you a follower of country music? Those guys are freaks. And the same thing happens to us in church. We keep coming to appease someone else, and pretty soon we get into the flow of things. We begin to know the songs. We even recognize some of the stories and the teachings. Oh, yeah, that's in the Bible. The next thing we know, we're kind of fans of Jesus, but that can be the most dangerous situation to be in, because you never have the time, or you've never crossed the line. You've never maybe even been challenged about the commitment. Well, I'm challenging you. Understand what it means to be a follower, not just a fan. We have to have our own faith. If we're just following along by somebody else's or brought here by somebody else's on the coats, the tails of someone else, no, that's it's not ours. The faith would not be our own. We may keep coming back week after week, creating a false faith. That's basically someone else's in the first place. And then we're just kind of numbing ourselves to the whole real thing. We're not allowing it to happen. Beloved, we have to make our faith our own. We have to make at least that commitment. Jesus isn't looking for a relationship between us and our mom and dad, or us and our husband or wife and him. He's looking for a relationship with each one of us personally. Personally. Maybe one of the reasons that we read in Luke 14, verse 26, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life. It's pretty definitive, isn't it? He cannot be my what? Disciple, follower. Cannot be my disciple, my follower. And it's important that we define the relationship. And why is it important? So that we can come to church and actually be holier people? No. I'm not talking about because of church. Church is where it will, yeah, really be felt. But I'm talking about every day as you're out there. And it's important because there is a time when that decision is going to be the only thought in your mind. It's going to become the only thought of your future. And that is when this life is ending, right? And now all of a sudden, you really are going to define that relationship. Or that relationship is going to be defined in a real big way. And if you have put some previous effort into defining it, and you have defined it so that you indeed are a follower, that's going to make all the difference, not in the world, but in eternity. It's going to make all of the difference in eternity. So it's not about our moms and our dad. It's about us and Jesus. It's about us and God. So let's begin now to search our heart over these next weeks and ask, are we followers of Jesus Christ, or are we just fans? Because it makes a big difference in how we live, not just now, but how we also live in the future, in eternity. All God's people said,
amen.
Amen.